Welcome to the Infernal Schoolhouse Podcast, Explosions and Fire. I'm Brian.
And I'm Aaron.
And today on the podcast, we have a special guest, Emma, who just happens to run a program at a library where kids get to play D&D. Thank you for being on the show with us, Emma.
Welcome. I am delighted to be here. Thank you.
So excited. So first off, just take a moment and let's introduce yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Emma. I am the teen librarian at the Bemis Library in Littleton. And I have wanted to be a librarian since I was 10 years old, so kind of living the dream. I do a lot in my job, but most of the stuff that I do that really fills me with joy is the programming, specifically the stuff I do with, you know, nerdy stuff, Dungeons and Dragons and board game night and stuff like that.
And that's how I met you.
Yes.
I volunteered to run a D&D game at the library.
And you are fantastic. It's... And I only have to ask you to get off of the tables a couple of times.
did I tell you that story?
No, but that sounds on brand.
I was role-playing a guard in a tower, mm-hmm. and I got up on the chair, and I was pantomiming, mm-hmm. handing things over to the players. And I could just, when you walked up to me, I could just see it in your eye. And you were like, so I'm going to ask you not to stand on the furniture.
It's difficult because there's two wolves inside of me. There's the wolf that delights in the drama and the excitement. And there's the wolf that knows that I could get in trouble if you fell and got hurt.
And then and as soon as you said it to me, immediately I thought, yes, playing on the furniture in front of all these children is probably bad.
I joke that one of the most important parts of my job is making sure the kids don't climb on the bookshelves and then yeet themselves onto the beanbags. you are actually the closest I've had to that happening.
Wow. I'm honored to be one of your most unruly children.
That's okay. I appreciate it.
What a surprise. Yeah.
But no.
Aaron's shocked right now. Actually, Aaron's job is to keep me from yeeting myself off of things.
This is accurate.
Yeah. Physically and metaphorically.
Except in games.
That's right.
It's absolutely, you know, through the proxy of your character, you are allowed to yeet as hard as you want.
Yeet or be yeeted.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is it's the intersection of librarianing mm-hmm. and the role-playing game D&D thing.
Is that a word, by the way?
No, probably not.
Anything's a word if you believe it hard enough and can say it with conviction.
Anything's a word if you're brave enough. That's really cool. And I will say, having worked with you in this capacity, your joy really shines through, which I think is super fun.
That means a lot to me. Thank you. Yeah, the thing that really got me moving toward libraries, I think like probably a lot of people who grow up as a person who finds, you know, joy in the weird and the fantastic and doesn't necessarily fit into normalcy comfortably. I was pretty harshly bullied. I was pretty isolated. And the person who made me feel seen and appreciated was the teen librarian at my childhood library. And her name was Spring Lee. Spring Lee was an incredible woman. She was unapologetically geeky, passionate, excited, empowering. And, you know, I had wanted to be a librarian before I met her, but growing up with her sort of like giving me permission to be myself in middle and high school, that cemented it. I wanted to be what she was for me for as many kids as I possibly could. Mm. Lamentably, she actually passed away in 2016, right before I managed to finish my graduate degree and become an actual official librarian. So a lot of what I do in no small part sort of as a honoring her memory.
Stop making me cry.
I know.
The librarian episode is not supposed to be the one that gets me. What the hell?
Feels.
It's good
big
stuff.
Feels. But yeah, so she was actually the person who not just introduced me to librarianship, she was also the person who introduced me to Dungeons and Dragons. Mm. So I have very cringe memories of the very first character I made, which was a exiled princess elf psionicist. So cringe.
Oh, I would play that character.
I would play it in a heartbeat.
That sounds awesome.
But yeah, I think everyone has that. Maybe not everyone, but a lot of us have that first character that we make with this like aspiration of being, you know, unimpeachably perfect and you know, powerful and you know, tragic in certain ways, but also powerful enough to overcome all of that. And now I'm just like, I'm okay allowing for just the absolute chaos. We were talking about Goblin Core as a social movement. I feel like a lot of my characters, when I do have the random chance to play, definitely skew more in the emotional goblin sense, where I'm not worried about being perfect. I'm worried about having a good time.
Yes.
So was there a D&D night there before you got there, or is this totally your brainchild?
So-ish. There was a volunteer who was very impassionate about Dungeons & Dragons, but also was kind of, I hate to use the word, but kind of gatekeepery. Mm-hmm. So there was a D&D program, but it was only for the people that this volunteer deemed worthy of it.
We talk a lot about gatekeeping.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty rough thing, for yeah. sure.
I think that, I think it's understandable. Again, especially if you are in a position where it feels like the world doesn't make space for you, you want to have a space that you can control, and you can control who comes in there. But you do yourself a disservice, I think, when you limit the number of people you allow at the table.
Well said.
Thank you. I do my best. So to answer your question, there kind of was. As it exists now is definitely something that I fostered and that I built.
Yeah, that's great. It's cool to see, because you just run the hell out of it. Like, yeah. And sometimes you speak to me like the kids or like the DMs, and I like it, because I'm like, I'm here, and oh, stand over here, got it. Oh, mm-hmm. help with that table, got it. Yep. But you run it so well, and you allow for such a cool, special thing to happen mm-hmm. at those tables.
I remember how much it meant to me to know I could go to the library and become something, you know, something fun and something powerful and something that felt like a delight to be. Mm. And I like having a space that I can make that happen for the kids. I will be honest, there's a part of me that really laments the fact that I don't actually get to run the games much anymore. The only times I run is when we have one of our volunteer dungeon masters call it at the last minute and I can't get a backup. Mm. But, you know, there is something that is so fun being able to spectate, watching you and all of our other fantastic dungeon masters, you know, running this event. It's basically I get my own personal like live show of Critical Role in four tables, you know, every month.
Yeah. So related, right before we went live, you told a story about teens interacting with the library. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could just say that on the podcast, because I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. We were talking about what it's like when people come into the library and the library manages to totally upend their expectations. There's a bit of common knowledge anecdote in, you know, library schools and library services where you get the people when they are very young, or you get them when they are adults coming in with their own children. And sometimes you get them as they age into seniorhood and they've got nowhere else to go. Yeah. It's very hard to find ways to like connect with, you know, that school age, you know, into high school, you know, young adult space. So it always really delights me when someone comes into the library and it might be their first time since, you know, they were toddling around in story time. And I get to show them we are not just a quiet room full of books. The library is a dynamic space. It's a creative space. It is an exciting space. Like, I have video game consoles that the kids can play. We have a, you know, stack of board games, you know, taller than, you know, probably you and me stacked on top of each other. You know, we have a maker space where people can, you know, craft all sorts of stuff. We have events. We have Dungeons and Dragons, yo. Like, there's so much that is there, and it is so important to me to like make sure that people don't underestimate libraries. There is, you know, there is this belief everyone has that they are, you know, quiet spaces where no one's allowed to have fun, and if you talk too loud, the librarian's going to come over and shush you. And yes, I do have to shush, but mostly because, you know, you're trying to ensure that everyone has the ability to enjoy the space rather than, you know, one person just, you know, shouting, screaming, you know, yelling at FIFA or,
Yeah. When you said it's a quiet, you know, quiet place full of books, I've had people, when I tell them that I run there, the games, they're like, well, do you have to whisper? And it's funny to me because that room is so loud. You literally sometimes cannot hear. And you can just tell, you know, like at the table across the way when something insane happens and everyone's screaming and everyone's standing.
Yep. That is, the sound level is honestly the thing that's limiting our capacity to expand beyond where we are.
Yeah. Only Which because, is the same. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's the same at a game store, right? The tables are similar spaced. And you go into a game store sometimes and you're like, I cannot hear myself think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be going to Gen Con for the first time this year, and I am so excited. I have seen pictures of Gen Con. It looks like it looks like the physical manifestation of all chaos, and I'm excited to see how loud it is.
And we will be there.
We'll be there too.
We'll find you, and it will be awesome.
That's right.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
I want to say, like, on a side note, we talk about public libraries and the joy of that. I mean, like every week as a kid, I would go to the library with my mom and I would rent movies, watch movies, rent books. So many things that were, I think people don't know are available to you at a public library. And I think like really formed a lot of my childhood that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't spent so much time in libraries. So I have a very special place in my heart for just that alone. And I appreciate that you are a part of that. So, but I would ask you, thinking about that, you were kind of like living the dream right now of being able to be a librarian and then also running a D&D game night while you're there. So how do you manage to fuse those two together? And then what advice do you have for us who are looking to kind of put our passions together?
Okay, I actually wrote out an answer for this. And I realized that as soon as you asked that question, it's like,
I was waiting for the crackle of the paper to be like, first, I'd like to thank the Academy.
Yeah, basically. Farts.
That's the worst word that's ever been said on the podcast.
That's right. Oh, no. Not farts.
Okay. True story. I have to be very careful about swearing. I love words. And that does not discount like the naughty words.
We love
but
them
I
too.
But I work with teenagers, and I want to try and like foster the good example of, you know, when you're in public and when you are trying to comport yourself in a acceptable manner.
By not standing on furniture.
Yeah. You can't say, you know, all the fun words.
All the really spicy words.
So my go-to swears when I'm at work is farts and pants. Like, anytime...
Wait, can you use that one in a sentence?
Anytime, just pants? Anytime you would say shit or fuck, you say pants. It's like, sorry.
You just said it.
I did it. But you'd say holy pants or what the pants.
I see. What the pants? That's catchy, actually. Yeah,
what the pants. Yeah. Or dumb as pants.
My stepmom would always say sugar plum fairies very angrily.
But almost like it was still nasty. When
That's
she
right.
Said, like, oh, God, she's very upset.
I've been enjoying watching Bluey, and I love the swear that the dad has, which is, ah, biscuits. There's something about saying biscuits with that sort of just venom that it's perfect. I'm sorry. I've gotten us very far afield. You do not have to put
I'm excited about fart pants, and this is staying in here. So.
Oh, I know Aaron's sense of humor, and the minute you said it, I was like, he's probably going to use that little clip for the little reel that he does.
Librarians. Librarians, they say the weirdest things. Anyway, the question that you had was, how have I managed to sort of dovetail the two things that I love, which is librarianship and, you know, geeky game stuff.
Yes.
Really, it's a matter of, I think in my case, it was a matter of expressing the fact that this is something that is desirable, something that, you know, the kids want, something that is beneficial for the development of, like, good humans in our society. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could very easily have made the case, you know, it's going to be a popular program and we're going to have a lot of people come through the door. What I did was I tried to come at it from a place of, this is an important tool for self-discovery, for self-development. This is something that helps to build interpersonal skills, teamwork, stuff like that. I didn't mention, you know, murder hoboism or the nature of people trying to hit on all the barmaids and stuff. Mm-hmm. That just develops naturally on its own. But generally,
you don't need to say that to the parents.
No. But really, you can find ways, I think, to make the case for why role-playing games are valuable. And it's not just for fun. I mean, admittedly, it is fun. But it is also something that if you have someone who's a harder sell on doing things just for the sake of the fun of it, there are psychological and developmental reasons that having a space where you can, like, test drive parts of your personality or parts of your identity is valuable. One of my favorite things that came out of a Introduction to Dungeons and Dragons program that I ran two years ago, one of the kids asked, because we were talking to the kids through, creating their characters, and one of these kids, when we got to gender, asked, is it okay if I have a gender that is different than, if my character has a gender that's different than my gender?
I've had this too.
Yes.
Like me, adult Brian, I had this too.
Yeah. But so this kid decided to go with the pronouns they, them for their character. And less than a year later, this kid comes back and this kid has, basically, words I'm trying to say. I'm getting emotional, and
you're
so my
fine.
Words are killing me.
You're fine.
This means a lot to me. So to this kid, after doing this program, the next time I see them, less than a year later, they let me know, hey, so I go by a different name now, and I go by they, them pronouns. And, we talked about it, and, they said the reason why is because they had a chance to try it out in this D&D character, and that gave them, the feeling of, feeling seen, feeling realized, and then made them feel comfortable asking for people in real life to, refer to them by they, them pronouns.
I thought we said you weren't going to make us cry.
I know.
You did it again, Emma.
I know. Ah. I know.
Wow, that is a really
That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really big feels day.
You've touched on a lot of things that we've talked about on past podcasts and even areas that we want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I'm interested in is what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced? I feel like maybe you've touched on them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also wondering specifically, are there any lingering effects of the satanic panic and that sort of really negative, biting connotation that D&D is bad?
I have to say I have not had any experience of that. Not even like parents anonymously putting in comments or anything. Every time this program runs and I send out the emails asking people to, hey, confirm you're going to be here, there's at least two or three parents who respond saying, thank you so much for doing this. This is the highlight of my kid's month. We're so happy that you offer this. I have not had a single instance of anyone expressing directly to me or, anonymously expressing to the library or management or anything like that, that they find this in any way a negative thing, which I think that means we won.
I think that means we won.
That
actually is another emotional moment for me because I faced that. I know Aaron faced that.
Definitely.
A lot.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you did too. Just this overwhelming feeling of it's bad and it's wrong and it's shameful.
Even if it's not bad, wrong, and shameful, for a lot of people, it's, I don't understand it, and because I don't understand it's weird, and you're weird for liking it.
Yes, okay, right. That's.
But I'm so proud to say that I have found nothing but positive acceptance of it, and that is a wonderful. It's so wonderful to know that we've managed to, to defeat that dragon. There are still more dragons out there. There is still a sense of disconnect that a lot of people have. There's a sense of loneliness that a lot of people have. But we have bested this dragon, and that is a fight that will hopefully let us then, overcome all of the other, sadnesses and all of the pains that we have.
Yeah. Another related note that I was thinking about when you were talking is sometimes parents play.
Oh,
yeah.
I can
think of twice now where I've actually had a parent and a child play at the table, and it was awesome. And the last dad that I had, he was full of joy and wonder, just like the kids were. And he hadn't played since he was like 12.
Yes.
And I could really see it. It was like coming alive, and he was remembering. And he had expressed all these reservations when he sat down. And as soon as he started playing, he was like, oh my gosh. And at the end, he was like, thank you so much for letting, as if I had done something by letting another responsible adult, well, one responsible adult be at my table. But he was so thankful to me.
Well, you are doing something. You are opening the portal to that adventure. And that is, you know, that is the important thing that Dungeon Masters do. This particular gentleman you're talking about, when he and his son came through the door, he like looked at me askance and says, is it always just kids?
Yeah, he's like, whoa, I thought this was...
Yeah. And I mean, admittedly, in our situation, yeah, it's largely kids. But it's largely kids because they're ravenous for it. I make the joke that I could run Dungeons & Dragons once a week and the kids would still be begging for more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's always cool to see the same faces come through.
Yeah.
Like the couple of the kids will walk in and they'll be like, I remember him.
Yep. Well, again, it's one of the things that Dungeons & Dragons is secretly doing. It's building community. You know, there's that sense that people have of the stereotype of the nerd as this lone, you know, sad person in a basement. Now, we are building community. We're
sad people in the loft talking to each other.
That's right.
And we are not sad people congregating in the library, scarfing pizza, and, you know, standing on tables.
Especially while we're playing and while we're connecting.
Yeah.
It's a really special feeling. Yep.
So, you know, playing D&D for a long time, and I know that you've kind of run the gamut of what it means to be as a player when you're younger, and then as a player now as an adult, but then now also running this program. Mm-hmm. So, now that you're an adult and you're a longtime player, what is it you're seeing as the difference between the teens that are playing it now and then the adults that are playing it now?
Gotcha. I think what I might do is I might just focus on the teen aspect first. Yeah. And I'm going to relate it to what it was like when I first started playing as a teen and how the kids are playing now. So I think probably the biggest thing that I see different, and this might have just been the crew that I ran with. There were several people when I was a teen who played who I would say tended towards some of that, you know, the bad habits that you see, you know, the, you know, messing with the party members, murder hoboism, stuff like that. More often than not, the kids who, especially the kids who are in the library program, they understand that the game is more fun when you play it together and not necessarily when you're just, you know, messing with your fellow players.
Yeah, or just in it for yourself.
Yeah.
And Aaron and I actually have recent experience with toxic adult players where at the end of the game, we're like, oh, we should probably say something. Yeah. And we actually got one of them. We had a little recap and we got one of these players to be like, wait, I'm a toxic player. And we're like, you are, sweetheart.
The important thing is, what do you do with that information? Because if you identify the fact that you might be engaging in problematic behavior, but you keep engaging in problematic behavior, then you're a problematic person. If you just have a misstep and you find a way toward constructive play, toward cooperation, toward, you know, sharing the spotlight, that's important. Again, that's one of those social skills that D&D can foster for people to learn. And it doesn't matter if you're a teenager or if you're an adult. It's something that you can learn at any age.
Yeah,
and it's a great vehicle to learn that.
Yes.
And I'm actually thinking about a time. This was my hardest, the most challenging moment that I had faced in this program. I had designed what I thought was a bulletproof hook. A little girl with, like, I described her as like pigtails, you know, the big doe eyes. Mm-hmm. She runs up to the adventurers and she's pleading for them to help. And this probably maybe 10 or 11 year old boy was like, I tie her to a tree.
Oh,
and luckily you were walking by, just kind of like the beat cop, you know, it's like walking around. And I wasn't even able to form words at this moment. Mm-hmm. But the thing that happened in my head was, that's not the game.
Yep.
And that's actually what you said. You said, no, that's not how this game works.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this already. And you now even have like a poster on the wall.
Yes.
That declares this.
Yes.
But that's not the game. Mm-hmm. And so I got to watch you sort of teach or redirect in real time someone who needs to learn the rules of engagement for D&D, but also for
society. Right. Jinx.
Yeah. So I want you to hold this in your thought, Brian, because this is going to come in our next podcast when we're talking about fantasy realms and about working through them. But I think a lot of what you're talking about, I've had this idea in my head of TTRPGs being a lot like the holodeck. Super weird nerd reference. But,
oh, no, yeah, I feel you.
Or like the Danger Room for the X-Men, right? Where it's like you have this ability to understand who you are, find out what means something to you, but then also understand boundaries and then how to push them or not push them. And I think that those give those to you. And so like being able to reinforce those rules or being able to give somebody the idea of, hey, maybe I can pick a different gender in the game. And then what does that mean for me long standing wise? What am I working with from a latency standpoint that maybe I want to explore? And I think that TTRPGs give us that opportunity.
And it's a matter of how much of that do you want to experience in that single moment? How much of that do you want to, after that experience, take forward in the real world? One of the things, I'm going to circle this back to books. One of the things that we talk about in literacy studies is the idea of books as a mirror, as a window, and as a sliding glass door. Mm-hmm. The concept basically means when you are reading a book, you are going to relate to a character in one of three ways. It's going to be a thing where you look at the character and you see it as a reflection of yourself. You look at the character and it is a window, a portal to understanding someone else's experience. Hmm. Or it is a way for you to see something that is not your experience, but that you want to make a part of your experience. That is the walking through the glass door.
Wow.
And that's fiction. That's games.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing that games can do.
Yeah. And what I love about it, and I love everything that you just said, Aaron, that's cool. And I'm glad we're going to go there next time. But the agency that you bring in a role-playing game is really powerful.
Yes.
Because you can actually do things. And I love the idea, especially for kids, of redirecting the behavior. Mm-hmm. But I also love the idea of if players do something stupid, and Aaron is great at this, there will be consequences.
Yes.
So if you want to be a murder hobo, you're well within your right, but you're probably going to not be in the next couple sessions because you're going to be in prison. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And It's like, you're welcome to make that choice. That's totally fine.
And I think that it's far less common for this to happen, but sometimes there's the inverse of that, where you have problem DMs. Mm-hmm. The DMs that... Mm-hmm. are in it because they want to have the sense of power. They want to have that sense of being able to control your fate, and you have no choice. You have to do it this way or that way. The best games happen when no one comes at it from a place of, I have control at your expense.
Yep.
It is always a place where you build it together, you work together.
Yeah, and the exercising of power is in any seat at the table is not fun for anyone. Yeah.
Yes, this forever DM agrees with that sentence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so this one may be a little bit of a loaded question, but how do you select your dungeon masters and what's it like hurting them? Is it worse than hurting cats?
So I have the privilege of working with some very talented and very generous people. Largely what I'm looking for when I ask for volunteer dungeon masters is, you know, are you willing to work with teenagers? Because that is going to be a non-starter if someone isn't comfortable working with teens. You know, how comfortable are you with new players? And usually those two traits self-select, you know, people who are going to be good fits.
Mm-hmm.
People who are... you know, who are patient, people who are, you know, flexible and versatile and able to, you know, able to help when someone doesn't understand how the game is played and shepherd them in the direction of, you know, that good development.
It occurs to me also how much range there is with the DMs that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. Because Brian always comes with like level one, there's this really mean monster.
Yeah.
And then there's seriously DMs that you have that are like, I'm running a level 17 dungeon crawl. And I'm like, for kids?
Yep.
Like, I would be intimidated to play at that table, but they love it.
Yep. It is a delight to see sort of the flying too close to the sun actually work out. And really the important thing, it might be messy. Mm. And the person you're talking about, he very regularly plays, you know, runs, you know, pretty ridiculously overpowered adventures. sometimes those adventures are over very quickly.
Because everyone's dead.
Or they just super murked the bad guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, once you get to level 17, you're like casting high-level spells willy-nilly. Like,
yeah. Right.
There's not much that's going to survive a level 8 fireball. Yeah.
Like, I hope the bad guy is like some kind of a deity.
You kind of have to get there at that point.
Exactly. All right, so we have arrived at our big, bad, evil question of the podcast that stumps everyone. So what should we have asked you that we didn't? Or is there anything else you want to talk about?
You should ask me about the world that I'm building. Oh,
tell me about the world that you're building, because I'm excited now.
No one's ever actually made us ask, though. I really like that. You should ask.
So I've actually got two different scenarios that I'm building. First is a whole campaign world. And importantly, this is named after Springly. Springly gave herself a character name, her elfin name that she actually adopted after she got married was Illaurian. Mm. So the name of this world is Illaurian.
Oh, stop it.
we shelved the Kleenexes over there.
That's right.
So the world of Illaurian is...
It's a beautiful name, actually.
It is. Springly was a very special person, and I'm very grateful that she was in my life. So the world of Illaurian is something I've been basically writing since 2016, since Springly passed. But more recently, I got this crazy idea in my head, partially inspired by the comic series The Wicked and the Divine and the video game Stray Gods.
Mm, very nice.
I'm calling it The Forgotten Pantheon. Mm. The Forgotten Pantheon is a game where you play where there are no deities left in existence. Everyone knows that they used to exist, but they have been gone for at least a generation. With their disappearance, a grand threat also disappeared, but no one remembers that in the same way that no one remembers the gods. Like, they knew they were there, but it's like an empty space. No one can remember what filled it. The whole point of the game, the players, as they begin to grow in power, realize they are in fact those forgotten deities.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I want to play in this world.
Nice.
I want playtesters.
You.
So the whole idea is that you start off with a blank slate of a world and you create a pantheon based on what is it that the players are building. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you imagine a person, you know, if you take the distilled essence of a person and turn that into like a paragon for any sort of these like elemental forces, forces of good, forces of evil, forces of life and death and chaos and stuff like that. How would you be if all of a sudden you were in charge?
I have like 10 character ideas for this playtest that I'm assuming I'm invited to.
100%. Right
now. Can we do it at the library?
Maybe. I won't be able to do it while I'm working. Okay. But
just find a safe space, Brian. Why is it going to be the library?
I love the library.
I love the library too. Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that, and I would totally play test that.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Is there a possibility that one of them might be the Lord of Murder? Because I'm kind of hoping so.
Good possibility. Oh, one of the things I forgot to mention. In the world of Illaurian, there's a pantheon there that's already established, and all of the gods are based on authors. So, you know, Tamora Pierce is a deity, and, you know, George R. R. Martin's a deity, nice. You know, Tolkien's deity.
Oh my gosh,
deity.
I totally want to meet him.
The Lord of Unfinished Works.
The Lord of finishing your goddamn series.
Yeah.
So. That's awesome. Well, Emma, thank you for joining us today. This has been a blast. We've had a really good time chatting with you.
I'm unexpectedly emotional.
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
That was pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And thank you all, dear friends, for spending time with us this week. Please check us out on our Instagram or at our website, infernalschoolhouse.com. Oh, and we sell stuff on Etsy, too.
Also, a reminder that we are now live streaming our Monster of the Week campaign on Twitch on Mondays bi-weekly. You can watch us at twitch.tv/infernalschoolhouse, and you can catch our past episodes at youtube.com/@infernalschoolhouse. Pretty cool stuff.
Thanks, everybody.